And now, live from Level 5 Productions on the island of Milleronia, it's The Larry Miller Show! Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who loves good air conditioning. Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And boy, is it ever beautiful here on Milleronia today. I don't mind telling you, it's very, very, very hot back in our home on the mainland in the Los Angeles area. It's crazy hot, but it's really nice here on Milleronia. Yes, I know I control the weather, but sometimes if people displease me or if I get a little cranky, I control it so they don't like it. But it's not a bad day today. It's a beautiful day here today. Makes me and Colonel Jeff so happy. And of course, that's the Doc Holliday Orchestra and the June Taylor Dancers, featuring boy tenor Edward Starkman asking the musical question, if Lassie loved to eat cantaloupe, would that make her melancholy? Yes. Yes, it would, Edward. And it's a heck of a joke. The Colonel and I both thought, you know what? Smart. It's so smart, in fact, that I didn't get it right off the bat. I thought, what? And then the Colonel and I both thought, wait, melancholy. See, Lassie is a collie. And if she loves cantaloupe, that means that's a lot of melon. And so that describes her, apart from her heroic duties and her adorableness, but that could make it, she could very well be called a melon collie. Or melancholy. So good one, Edward. And I don't know what that gets you, but I want to tell you that I think it's a terrific joke. Good work. And as long as I have a minute, I just want to tell you that the reason I picked the June Taylor Dancers is because, well, bless her heart, she was the June Taylor Dancers were the dancers on the Jackie Gleason Show, the big variety show. And they would dance all around in circles and squares and in big chorus lines. They were terrific. And June Taylor and those dancers were the cause behind one of the greatest jokes in movie history that Johnny Carson thought was just the favorite thing he'd ever seen in a movie was from The Producers. Movie made, it's got to be 1968, 69, something like that. Mel Brooks movie, a great movie. And that one point, one of the jokes, his dancers in that show, and remember they're trying to make the worst show in American history so that it closes one night guaranteed. And one of the jokes was that the dancers come out in the Nazi show and they're beautiful young women and they're dancing and then they get into a circle and they start dancing around in a circle and then there's a visual shot of the dancers in the circle, and it's a full circle, and right in the middle is a huge swastika. The dancers make a huge swastika, and it's pretty funny. It's a very smart, it's a funny Mel Brooks joke, and he had lots of them. And I think everyone who saw that just laughed out loud. And so did Johnny Carson. So those were the June Taylor Dancers anyway. And the Doc Holliday Orchestra, well, if you don't know who Doc Holliday was, folks, you've never seen one of the dozens of great Wyatt Earp movies out there. And I'm going to mention Doc a little later. But he deserves an orchestra and much, much more. And by Amazon and PayPal. That's right, my two favorite companies. They're two of our sponsors, and boy, oh boy, did they do a great job. Amazon does three things no other company on earth does. One, whatever you order, you're going to get it. Anything you can think of, you order it and get it. Two, they already have it there. They don't even have to order it themselves. They don't have to borrow it from anyone or look around or ask any employees, well, do you have one of these things? They've got it right there in their gigantic warehouse that's a mile long and a mile wide and a mile high and a mile deep. Go to Amazon. But even better, let us take you there. You could go on your computer or your iPhone or whatever the heck you have. Don't bother with that, though. Come to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain, Tom Mix? By the way, I played timpani, among many other things, in the high school band. And it was a fun instrument to play, too, because you could do things like that. Of course, that's normally not written in pieces, so it's not the kind of thing your conductor would be thrilled with. But I like that at the end of that for our website. It's a website. I sometimes I forget. And go there. Go to our website. And we have a banner that says Amazon. Click that banner. Then go take a nap. Go lie down on your big lazy boy chair. And you can put a magazine over your head. Or just turn on a game. Or make yourself a sandwich with a nice cold beer. Or just do none of that. And just cross your hands on your chest and go to sleep. And PayPal. You can do a lot of the same things. You know what? PayPal. Folks. If you think you're going to save the world, the way to do it might be through PayPal. They do a terrific job, and I'm glad they're with us, too. Because PayPal, you know what? If you enjoy my show, and why wouldn't you? And if you'd like to send a few bucks to help out, and why wouldn't you? You do it through PayPal. And instead of saying, well, never mind, donate or pay what you like, I like to say buy us some drinks. That's right, because there are different levels, level 1 through 5, all the way up to...
We're driving to Florida!
Boy, I'd like to... At a certain point, that's going to feel like a Groucho Marx audience. You know what I mean? You say, yeah, I wonder where they all are now. But that's a favorite audience of mine, and I'm glad they were happy that night at my show. And by the way, So look, PayPal has a banner on our website, too, which, remember, is LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain, Tom Mix? How hard did you have to squeeze that bird? Anyway... Every little bit helps us keep the old leg lamp lit here. So thank you to everyone who's already contributed, and thank you to everyone who's going to do it right now. And so, you know what, folks? That brings me to my favorite part of the show, the joke of the week. And this is a great joke. I've liked this for a long time. This is, as my folks used to say, this joke is 1 year younger than God. And I think we set it up at the Catskills Hotels. One of the comics there was doing it. And I hope you like it, too. A guy goes to the hospital to visit his friend. And his friend is in, intensive care. And he's all strapped in with everything all attached to his body and a lot of needles in him. And he goes to see his friend and says, hi, I just came to see you. And the friend nods and smiles and... The guy, walks up and just says, the doctor says that he thinks, you're going to make it here, that you're going to, and his friend, starts to say something to him and doesn't quite say anything. And his visitor says, no, go ahead, say anything you want. It doesn't matter. I'm here for you. And his friend, again, now he's, He's starting to speak, and he can't speak, and now he holds his hand up, and he's, it's not coming out, and his friend, the visitor says, go say it, whatever's on your mind, I want to help you here, and the guy in the bed, points to the little tray, and there's a pencil and paper there, And so his friend says, oh, here, and he gives him the pencil and paper, and the guy in the bed starts, you know, writes down, and he's slowly and down, he's getting weaker, and he finishes the note, and he hands it to him, and he just, oh, his head rolls over, and he's out cold. He looks dead. And the visitor, oh, he's so upset, and he just takes the note and stuffs it in his pocket and runs out, calls to the doctor, doctor, nurse, anyone, please, my friend here. And they come running in, and, well, he's dead. He passed away. And the visitor says, well, he's so sad. What a terrible thing to see. And he goes home and washes up and just thinks about, oh, his friend. And he starts to take his visiting suit off, and he reaches into the pocket, and he finds the note that his friend wrote and gave to him. And he said, oh, for goodness sake. And he opens the note, and it says, you're standing on my air tube. That's a pretty good joke. And the Colonel and I both liked it, and I'm glad I remembered that thing. So I hope you like it, too. Remember, tell a friend, tell a loved one, tell someone in your family if you like one. That's a pretty good joke. Oh, it's one of those, oh, you idiot. Couldn't you watch where you were stepping? Because I guess people sometimes can't do that. And that brings me to my second favorite part of the show, the Poetry Corner. Yes, nothing better than a great string quartet and a man coughing. I'm still not sure how they relate, but you know what? It's fine with me. I like it. And this is a poem called On Dreaming by John Newton. John Newton lived from 1775. I'm sorry. John Newton lived from 1725 to 1807. And he was English. And he was a British sailor, in fact, for the Royal Navy, involved with the slave trade for a few years. And then he had a religious conversion and became a minister and hymn writer and an outspoken abolitionist against slavery. And then he wrote the famous and beautiful hymn, Amazing Grace. So this is quite a guy, John Newton. That's interesting also. I always thought, so it says, you know, he's involved with the slave trade for a few years, and he always, there's no good job with that. It's not like you want to say, well, what did he do? Maybe he just, you know, maybe he set up some of their dance hall meetings or, you know, had some of the anniversary parties, and there's no good part of the job there. You're either with the slave trade or you're not. In any case, though, he had quite a conversion, and we're glad he did. And he wrote this poem, and it's called On Dreaming. And here it is. When slumber seals our weary eyes, the busy fancy wakeful keeps. The scenes which then before us rise prove something in us never sleeps. As in another world we seem a new creation of our own. All appears real, though a dream, and all familiar, though unknown. Sometimes the mind beholds again the past day's business in review, resumes the pleasure or the pain, and sometimes all we meet is new. What schemes we form, what pains we take, we fight, we run, we fly, we fall, but all is ended when we wake. We scarcely then a trace recall. But though our dreams are often wild, like clouds before the driving storm, yet some important may be styled, sent to admonish or inform. What mighty agents have access? What friends from heaven or foes from hell? Our minds to comfort or distress? When we are sleeping, who can tell? One thing at least, and 'tis enough. We learn from this surprising fact Our dreams afford sufficient proof. The soul, without the flesh, can act. This life, which mortals so esteem, that many choose it for their all, they will confess was but a dream when wakened by death's awful call. Isn't that lovely? A good look at the dream world and what it means. And what an interesting insight to the second stanza before the end. Our dreams afford sufficient proof. The soul, without the flesh, can act. Well, thank you, John Newton. I'm glad I had a chance to read that today. And remember, this fellow, interesting life, wound up writing Amazing Grace. And that brings me to my third favorite part of the show. MMM, the magic movie moment. With the greatest piano note in history, ending that opening. Yeah, this is a good one, folks. Speaking of Doc Holliday, this is from 1993, and the movie is Tombstone, and it's starring Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Harry Carey Jr., Powers Booth, Dana Wheeler Nicholson, and Dana Delaney. It's a wonderful movie. In fact, I saw it again last night, and it's one of those that, yes, it's one of those that I've seen, oh, it must be 30 times, maybe 40 or 50 times. I love turning that on whenever it's on. And whew, if there's a better actress in the history of the world and a more beautiful woman than Dana Delaney, by the way, I'd like to know who it is, because she's a delightful professional, a great woman, and boy, a terrific actress. But someone who, phew, she's just as beautiful as she could be. And by the way, there are so many great Wyatt Earp movies in history, but this one is a very, very good one. And the magic movie moment today here for me to give to you is Doc Holliday's death scene in the Glenwood Sanitarium in Colorado. It's the one scene before the last. And if you don't know that about Doc Holliday, it's not revealing anything. Well, he had very bad tuberculosis. But he was out, he was a gambler, and he always supported his friend, Wyatt Earp. And that death scene, folks, is so good. Wyatt Earp, Kurt Russell, comes to the sanitarium to see him as he's been coming every day. And they have a chat, and there's a priest there just as he arrives, and the priest finishes up, and in a weakened voice, Val Kilmer says to him, Wyatt, hi. He says, yes, Father Feeney and I were just investigating the mysteries of the Church of Rome. He says it so beautifully, though. He was such a poet, and Val Kilmer made just a great poem out of his whole life in this movie. And I'm very proud of him. So that whole scene, what Val Kilmer says, what Kurt Russell responds, and how the scene winds up with Val Kilmer begging his friend to leave. If you have ever loved me, if you've ever cared for me at all, please, please leave now. Leave now. Which feels, even if you're not sure of this kind of thing, it feels like maybe something's about to happen to him and he wanted to be alone. And when Kurt Russell stands up to obey his friend and looks down at that last line, he says, thanks for always being there, Doc. And that's a great thing to say to me. And then they nod at each other and he walks out. And Val Kilmer, as Doc Holliday in this, is at that moment comical also, as he's being alone, just reacting because he notices his friend had given him Well, a book, a paperback book that he had just written. And he looks up at it, he holds it up and he looks at it, and the book's title says, My Friend Doc Holliday by Wyatt Earp. And it's a great part of that scene. We're very happy to see it. And then, folks, Val Kilmer plays the best death scene I've ever seen in any movie. It has, well, wit to it. It has affection in it. And that's part of why Val Kilmer made such a great character in that movie. And by the way, there are many great Wyatt Earps in movie history. I mean, Burt Lancaster, Henry Fonda, James Garner, there's so many more. They were great Wyatt Earps. And I had a talk about this with Val Kilmer. We were in a movie together. I can't remember the name of this thing. I should be able to know this name, shouldn't I? Shouldn't I know the name? The colonel just shrugged. Ah, what the heck? But, you know, it was at the first reading, which just before the movie starts shooting, in fact, the day before, we all got together, and this is, the best producers, the best director. It was just a terrific meeting, and I met Robert Downey Jr. was in this as well, and he was just great to meet. Oh, the colonel just licked it up. Yep. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang, which is a good movie. And so when I met Val that afternoon, just before we all sat down to read it and see how it felt, because we're going to shoot the next day, and I said to him, you know what? I hope this is not a pain in the neck, but I thought you were such a great Doc Holliday in Tombstone, but I'm wondering, you made the accent you used as part of the character sort of an East Coast Carolina or coastal Georgia accent, and there are many different Southern accents that we've all seen in movie, folks. Oh, many movies. The Texas accent has a lot of tough T's and hard R's, and I'm going to tell you what, and they're terrific accents, and they really fit. But the one Val Kilmer chose for this is more lyrical, and it suits his poetic nature more. It was, well, from coastal Carolina, where Doc Holliday was born and raised. But that accent has, where one-syllable words sound like two syllables, that, for instance, W-A-R is pronounced war. And it really suits an interesting character. Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like someone just walked over your grave. And he really squeezes every drop out of it. And I said to him, would you mind just telling me how you picked that accent over the others? And I was thrilled because he was interested. He said, well, I'll tell you. And he started to tell me all about it and how he picked it. And it was just him and me and other folks walking around. And it was the table with the producers and director and everything, because we're going to read any minute. And he tells me, and he spoke for about 5 minutes, and he told me everything. And the reason I'm telling you this now is I was so happy he was talking to me. I was so happy he was into it. And I was so happy that he was giving me a full response. I didn't hear a word. Isn't that ridiculous? I didn't hear a word of it. I was just so happy that he was speaking, just listening to him speak, and he spoke for about 5 minutes to me, and he finished, and the director said, okay, here we go, let's go, let's sit down and start, and we all did, and I nodded and smiled, and he nodded and smiled, and then he walked away, and it hit me instantly. I don't know what he said, and he said a lot, and I was interested in that response, but that's one of those. There are a lot of funny stories in show business, and sometimes, well, you behave like a picklehead, and so I guess this is one of those for me. Well, Val Kilmer's great. They all were. They were in that movie, and boy, He sure was in Tombstone. So, you know what, though? It just reminded me, because there are... Well, it's still hot out there in movie land. That's one of the reasons... Well, I own the island here on Milleronia, but it's one of the reasons it was not the right time to be there. It's been hot in the Los Angeles area, but not hot. It just the very 3 weeks ago, just I'm not talking hot. I mean very hot. I mean loony hot. The just really unacceptably hot, like crazy. This is it's like madness. And it's been reminding me when I'm there on the mainland, and the same with Colonel Jeff, that you, for instance, remember when movie theaters used to hang banners in the front over the ticket booth that said air conditioned, and it was always a royal blue banner, and the lettering was always in icy shaped white letters, air conditioned. And there was a banner around the banner of icy white icicles. And that looked good. It was a little before my time and the Colonel's time, but you know what? I would have gone in there. And in the 40s and 50s, good Lord, if it was a summertime like this on the mainland, good Lord. When something said like that, hey, come on in, see a great movie, and it's air-conditioned. I would have been in there in a second. I think you would, too. I mean, it's very, very hot here. And it's gotten, as the Colonel pointed out, humid, too. In the whole Los Angeles area, I'm telling you, it's crazy hot and crazy humid. It's so hot that if your best friend asked you out for lunch, you wouldn't go. You'd say, you know what? It's too hot. No. Thank you, but no. If Marilyn Monroe came back to life and called you to say she got a gorgeous hotel suite for the two of you for a week, and both your wife and God gave you permission, you still wouldn't go because it's too hot. Well, actually, I'd go to that, come to think of it. Wait a minute. That's not a good example. If I could have that meeting with my wife and God, and I can get that meeting, by the way, it's a tough meeting to get, but if at that meeting they both said, you know what, and God said that, you know what, you've been doing a good job, good father, you don't always remember gifts for your wife, but you know that, and she's told you that, and so, but now on this, on the whole Marilyn Monroe thing, go ahead, knock yourself out. And my wife would still, you know, nod and smile and say, go ahead, because she knows she wouldn't remember anything. I'd remember. But in any case, if I got that permission, I would go. It's so hot, your dogs wouldn't chase a really slow squirrel. And that should tell you something, because doggies, let's be honest, they're great at lots of things, but one of them is squirrel chasing. They wouldn't chase. Too hot. A restaurant you go to or a meeting you have may be important, but in this weather, it's all you'd talk about afterwards is how cold it was, if it was cold at the restaurant or the meeting. That's the only topic you'd have. And I was talking about this with the Colonel, and we both agreed. When you were a kid, was it really just so hot, or didn't you mind? I think maybe we didn't mind. And that includes you. We just didn't mind. My dad and his brother and sister grew up in Brooklyn and in a six-story walk-up and slept on their fire escape in the Brooklyn apartment. There was no air conditioning, no fans. It was, as I said, a six-story walk-up in the middle of 200 other buildings the exact same way. And they slept on the fire escape, which I thought was so cool when he told me about it when I was a kid. I said, wow, and I kept saying to him, you know, and then once he drove me out there to that part of Brooklyn so I could see the fire escape they slept on in the summertime. And he had to, as we were going, because I was just enthralled. I thought, oh, this is going to be terrific. And he turned and said to me, you know, we didn't want to. I just want to let you know that this wasn't a big thing for us, but it was pretty hot. And they didn't have a, it was a one-bedroom apartment they lived in, but it was only one bedroom because his father made a homemade bedroom for him and his wife. And that was just, it wasn't even 2x4s, it was 1x4s. And, you know, they just some sheetrock they put up and on one side. They didn't need two. And so they made a sort of a 10x10 bedroom for themselves. And, well, that's all right. That's the way folks were. But there was they slept on the fire escape. And I remembered, by the way, in the classrooms in my elementary school had nothing. That, never mind air conditioning, they had, but they had nothing. Zero for the hot days from April, June, and April, May, June. That would got really hot. This was on Long Island, and there was nothing. No fans, no air conditioning, no anything. And, all right, but that's the question again of, did we mind? No, we didn't mind. We knew it was hot. The teacher knew it was hot, but we weren't going to be able to fix it. So it was, we just knew that, all right, here we go now, the last couple of months of the year, of the school year. It's going to be hot. And we all just did it, that no one complained. There was nothing to complain about. There was no one to complain to, which is like cars not having air conditioning. And I remember when I was a kid, our cars, the first new car we got was a 61 Chevy Impala, hardtop, and but it didn't have air conditioning. We didn't get, that was the time of cars where you could start to get air conditioning. A couple of cars, it would, they were big units and they hung under the dashboard. It was like the size of a real air conditioner. But, I mean, you could. And I remember when we were driving around and my sister and me in the back and my mom and dad in the front, well, we had the windows open, of course, because that's what you did. Got to get something in there. And when we would pass a car with all the windows closed, we were really impressed because we knew, we thought, hey, look, they have air conditioning. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot to you and me today, because every car comes with air conditioning, I guess. Maybe not a Yugo, but I, well, maybe them too. But, I mean, everybody has air conditioning. And they not when I was a kid. And it was an interesting question. Colonel Jeff and I were talking about, if you were a dad today, with a family on Long Island and a house with no air conditioning, I think you would get arrested. And, you know, and he and I both looked at each other and smiled and nodded. Well, we always do that, I guess. But that's true. I think if you were a father today with a family on Long Island and a house with no air conditioning at all, I think you'd get arrested. In fact, you go to the hot seat. And that's not even the hottest part of our country, is it? Not by a long shot. It's amazing. Did your dad ever try to make a dad system of fans in your house with, well, this fan here and that window open there and 20 other pieces designed to just move the air a little bit? It's sort of like the way he arranged luggage in the trunk. Well, that was dad really going to work there, trying to get the house a little better. And it was great. We still have a nice house. Remember, in 1900, 1910, 1920, 1930, you know what? Even the richest people in the country had zero air conditioning. So you could just, even like Great Gatsby, you know what? They might have had parties where everyone was dancing around the fountain there, but they were parties at night, and there was no air conditioning during the day or at night. So, you know what, though? It's nice to think back. What did we have or not have then, and what do we have now? It's, I know, well, I know a lot about that. So do you. But we always know the same things, you and I. Homer is Homer, and Pluto is a planet. So remember, as always, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. So please remember that no matter how hot it is. And we'll see you here next time.